The gospel lesson from the gospel of Luke, we're starting at chapter 10. You find that on page 946. We'll be reading verses 38 through 42. Now, as they went on their way, he, meaning Jesus, entered a certain village, where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, and it will not be taken from her." May God add a blessing to the reading of His Word. Sometimes I wish I could take scissors to the Bible. A lot in the Bible inspires and encourages me, but there are some places that trouble me. Some stories I'd rather not hear. Like two of our readings this morning from Amos and the Psalm. I'd rather skip to the better part, to Mary and Martha and love and joy and peace and kindness. Skip past the scary and the angry parts. Luckily, I don't get my way, because if I did, we'd only have one text to work with instead of three. My sermon would be 2/3 shorter, and I know that would break your heart. So let's go back to Amos, chapter 8, verse 4. "Hear this, you who trample on the needy and bring ruin to the poor of the land, saying, 'When will the new moon be over so we may sell grain, and the Sabbath so that we may offer wheat? We will make the ephah small and the shekel great, and practice deceit with false balances, buying the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, selling the sweepings of the wheat.'" So, great. What's a shekel? They call this a translation, right? Anyone ever feel like you need a translation of the translation? Lucky for you, your paid professional clergy person is here to save the day. I went to school for this stuff. Studied Greek and Hebrew and Latin. I drew upon my years of study and all the skills that I learned in school and in seminary, and I looked it up on the internet. And according to the internet, which is always true, the shekel is a measure of weight, and the ephah, a measure of volume. So put yourself back in time and imagine that you're trading at a market. You bring in your goods, your olive, your fruit, or whatever you grow or make, and you set it up on the big scale. And then the trader pulls out his bag of weights, his little shekels, and he stacks them on one at a time until they balance. And then he hands you however many coins equal to that number of shekels. What you don't know is his shekels are heavy, and you're being cheated. So you take your coins, and you walk to the next shopkeeper. You hand him your coins. He pulls out a great big scoop and starts scooping grain into your bag. Grain to feed your family. What you don't know is that his scoop is small, and you're being cheated again. You don't figure it out until you get home and you open your bag and you find out that the grain in your bag, well, only half of it's really grain and half of it are just sweepings from the floor with no nutritional value. You would be angry, but you're too busy worrying about how you're going to feed your family for the next week. And here's the kicker. Those people that cheated you, They're religious. Those are church people. According to the text, they're sitting, wondering to themselves, when will the new moon be over? When will the Sabbath be done so we can sell again? Those are Jewish religious laws. Those are church members that are bilking people. Sitting right in the pew next to you, thinking, man, I wish this sermon was done so that I could go home and trade penny stocks and inflate the price and unload them. Let's skip back to the psalm. The psalm says, you love evil more than good, and lying more than speaking the truth. You love words that devour, O deceitful tongue. But God will break you down forever. He will snatch you and tear you from your tents. He will uproot you from the land of the living. The righteous will see and fear and will laugh at that evildoer. They will say, see the one who would not take refuge in God, but trusted in abundant riches and sought refuge in wealth. But I am like a green tree growing in the house of God. Does that scare anybody else? Am I the only one that finds that a little troubling? The psalmist, enraged, calls down vengeance, even to the point of death, and then dances on the grave, spits on it, and compares himself to a tree growing in the house of God, all gentle and serene. Emotionally, that's jarring, much less spiritually. I can't see Jesus saying something like that. But that's not the big reason why these two texts bother me. The big reason is part of me just loves them. Yes! Get them! Raise your hand if you've ever been cheated. That's right. We've all been there. But that's just the start, isn't it? In this room, I am sure that there are people who've been betrayed, lied to, rejected, bullied, belittled. In this room, there are people who've been physically attacked, verbally abused, had their property stolen and vandalized. How do I know? Because that's all happened to me. And some of you have been through worse. I know for a fact there are people sitting in this room that if I had to go through what they went through, I'd cry like a baby. But it gets worse. I can deal with it if someone steals from me to feed their family. I can even deal with it if someone steals from me to feed their drug habit. I won't like it, but I can understand. But there are two kinds of people that I just can't stand. Evil people and hypocrites. Because not only will they cut you, they'll smile while they're doing it. The percentage of people who are just plain evil is actually amazingly small. Unless you read Harry Potter, and then they're everywhere. But in real life, the amount of people who are just plain evil is vanishingly small. Most people just want to live and let live, want to go about their lives and be left alone. But even if it's only a percent of a percent, even if it's only a fraction of a percent, in the course of a lifetime, you're going to meet a few. And most of you have. Many of you have memories of someone who tried their hardest to make your life hell. Some of you bear scars. As bad as that is, it gets worse. Because I honestly think I prefer the evil people to the hypocrites. Because with an evil person, if you have an adversary who is dedicated to opposing you and making your life hard, at least you know who to punch. With a hypocrite, they slide the blade into your back. And then they send you a get-well card while you're in the hospital. They take the things of God and they twist them into weapons and snares. They turn grace into a power play. They turn love into abuse. And that makes me angry. I heard a story once about two girls came to church the day after prom. They were proud and excited of their dresses. So they put them back on again, makeup and all, came to church to show their friends and their family and their neighbors. When they got there, a woman pulled the pastor aside and said, "Did you see those girls? Look at the clothes they're wearing. That is completely inappropriate for church. The one girl's skirt is way too short. The other girl's dress is cut way too low. You need to do something, Pastor. You need to do something right now before they ruin church for everybody." I'm really glad this story is not about me, because I'm not nearly as gracious and gentle as this pastor was. Moments like that, I agree with Amos. I would really love for God to just reach down and smack people. I want some smiting. Let's see it. This pastor said, "These girls came to church and gave of their best. Let's honor their intention rather than critique their execution." Which brings us to our last story. Jesus, the good teacher, comes to the home of Mary and Martha, and Martha is working hard, making preparations, taking care of her guests. She's showing hospitality. She's feeding the stranger. She's feeding the hungry. And yet, here's Mary. And she's not helping at all. She's just sitting there, talking. That's not fair. That's not right. Certainly isn't in accord with the scriptures that say to welcome the stranger and feed the hungry. She's disobeying the scriptures. And finally, for the very first time, here sits the Son of God, right there, ready to do the smiting. So she says, "What are you going to do about this, Jesus?" And he says, no. He says, "She has chosen the better part." How can this be? How can Amos's picture of God be so different from the picture we see of Jesus? Well, we have to go back and look at Amos again. I'm okay with the psalmist because psalms are songs. And songs are about our emotions. And anger, righteous anger, that's an emotion. That's okay with me. Right? But Amos is a prophet. He's talking about the very nature of God here. And it doesn't seem right that what he says looks so different from what Jesus says. But if we look back at the text, Amos says that when God's great day of judgment comes and all the rights are wronged and all the justice is real, finally, on that day the ground will shake. On that day people will weep. On that day the sun will go dark in the middle of the day. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Maybe you've read something like that in the New Testament somewhere. Like the day Jesus was crucified. God fulfills Amos' prophecy. But not in the way Amos expected. Amos is like me. He wants God to get with the smiting. But God says, "You want someone punished? Fine. Punish me. You want to point the finger of accusation? Fine. Point it here. You want smiting? That's what smiting looks like." Suddenly, the anger in my heart cools. Pointing the accusing finger doesn't seem like so much fun anymore. Now I look down and I see blood on my own hands. And I realize the things that anger me so much in other people, the sins that I am so quick to accuse in my brother and my sister, those things live in my heart too. I don't need God to come down and punish the hypocrites. If God did, wouldn't be anybody left. I don't need God to come down and clip out the anger and the rage in the Bible. I need God to come down and take the hatred out of my heart.